Well, the first text on the text line says, is the Big Sports Breakfast on tomorrow? It is. We're here. Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, March 22. This is Sky Sports Radio, 10:17 a.m. in Sydney Town, and a very good morning to you wherever or however you are listening, if it's on the Tab app or elsewhere. And, well, we've got the teams in for round four in the NRL. Some stunning coaching news. Involving the Dragons, as revealed by the Sydney Morning Herald late yesterday, and Anthony Griffin. Last night, Felice Kaufusi lost at the judiciary, so that's a huge blow for the Dolphins ahead of the Battle of Brisbane on Friday night. Jerome Hughes was also unsuccessful. He copped a couple of weeks for dangerous contact on Tanner Boyd. The Storm have named Cameron Munster. A lot of positional changes for the Tigers, and what is an intriguing 6 o'clock game Friday night at Amy Park. We've got, the Socceroos are in town. They're playing Ecuador in the first of two friendlies, their first matches since their amazing performance at the World Cup. The first match Friday night at Combank Stadium. News involving the slipper winner Shinzo off to the spelling paddock yesterday. And we've got the third one day in Chennai tonight. And series decided there between Australia and India in the last match of that tour to the subcontinent. Clarkie, morning, mate. How are you?
Morning, Mido. Morning, Loz. Morning to our listeners. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Looking forward to seeing the boys hopefully win this ODI series. Looking forward to see if David Warner plays. He's been taken on the tour, but hasn't looked like getting the game with his elbow. So it doesn't sound too positive. So I'm unsure why he went over. Well, even if they thought he wasn't going to play the first two games, I don't know why.
Wouldn't you medically clear him back here first?
Unless they're saying he's staying for the IPL anyway.
Good point.
Let's just take him and he's going to stay for the IPL. So, but hopefully the Aussies can win. Hopefully Starkey can do his thing again and get this sport a little interesting to see what this pitch is like. I don't think it'll have as much pace and bounce as game number two. But, yeah, looking forward to watching that. And change to the halves for the Tigers, Dragons. Full support of the board for their coach, not so much. So interesting night, Mido, to be honest.
Yeah.
How was your golf? How'd you hit them?
And morning to you, Lozza.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Yeah, really well. It was as good a... Been to a couple of golf days in my time. Probably not as many as you two, though.
It was good, was it?
It was sensational.
Was there a bit of wind on, or was it okay?
Yeah, it was a little bit. Definitely okay. A little bit, but it wasn't, down there at La Perouse, blowing absolute gale. It wasn't too bad, but it was windy at times. But, like, the fifth and sixth holes, down the fifth hole down a hill... Just ocean in the background.
Yeah, amazing.
We're all there, having a moment. Going, this has got to be the best hole in New South Wales.
Yeah.
It's just unreal. We played a ride as four ball Ambrose. We got one under as a team.
What's wrong with that?
Everyone contributed. Everyone had their laughable moments.
You find the water? Any swimming?
No, because there's a couple of holes you can hit in the water, but no.
Okay.
No, we didn't. We managed to avoid that.
It's good.
One stage, I played with from Stan Sports, Sean Maloney and Morgan Chiuanui. I had to separate them at one point. We play as a team, but the sledging, sledging got pretty hot and heavy there at one stage.
Love it.
It's like, boys, it's us against them, not us against each other. And they came around. Drinks cart came around plentifully.
Yeah,
as well. So it was as good a golf day as I've ever had. But Loza, coaching. Because there's been an interesting story across the ditch with the All Blacks as well. And just looking at all this, if an organisation or club goes at that moment, next season or next year, we're going in a different direction in professional sport, and you've got a current coach in now, the current coach's tenure is untenable straight away, isn't it?
Oh, you could think like that, yes. I'm unsure of the reason. I'm unsure of the reason why both organisations wanted to go down that path. But what I can say is they're, at least from my perspective, they're being upfront and honest about it. And we always talk about how clubs give the full support of the board, but then you know that they're working behind the scenes to offload the person without actually being upfront and honest with them. So with the Dragons one, I suppose they feel as though, yes, we're unsure of where we want to go. We're unsure if Anthony Griffin is the right man to lead us into the future. We want to let Anthony know right here and right now where he stands. If he wants to apply for the position again, he can. Otherwise, we are going to look around to see what is out there. Now, some people won't agree with that. Some people would have the view that you have, that your job is untenable. And he's got that option of walking away. I'm unsure, to be honest with you, where I sit on it. But I think what I do like is the fact that you're being open to the person and being honest with him. And I know that that is not something we see a lot of in professional sport, but I actually like the fact that they've told him where he stands.
But as a player sitting there now, just to bring everyone up to speed with the story as well. So the Sydney Morning Herald, Michael Chemis yesterday broke the story that Anthony Griffin has all but been sacked, really. He's been told he needs to reapply for his job as the club gets set to go through the process to appoint a coach for next year. And Griffin's in the final year of his deal this year, of course. Now, there's conflicting reports on whether Griffin will reapply. While there's a theory the club wants Jason Riles before the Storm potentially swoops, although he's still under contract with the Roosters, I think, until the end of next season there. And we know that the Roosters are generally reluctant to let go of anyone before their contract expires. We saw that with Craig Fitzgibbon. We saw, you know, some tension when Adam O'Brien left it before his deal expired and went to Newcastle. Anyway, so you've got Dean Young, Ben Hornby amongst, you know, a myriad of potential contenders there at the Dragons as well. Griffin has a 41.5 win percent record as a coach there at the Dragons. And here we are. He's been told he needs to reapply. So he hasn't been sacked as such, but let's face it, he's not getting the job next
year. This is called sugarcoating. He's sacked, mate. He should not reapply. It's embarrassing for him if he does. It's embarrassing for the Dragons if he does reapply and he gets it. I've seen this happen with Tim Nielsen, where he was told, we're looking elsewhere, you can reapply. It was horrible. It was a horrible process to be a part of. It was so hard on the coach. It was so hard on the players who, you know, you're backing the coach. You're supporting the coach. You get told, especially for these boys, at the start now, three games in, he's not going. He cannot be there next year. It's a gentle, soft, polite way of saying this will be your last season with us, unless the 15 people that can take the job don't agree to terms. Oh, then we'll reappoint you. It's game over. Will be a new coach for the Dragons next year.
But don't you just go now? Put an interim person in, because if you're a player there now. What does this do for the rest of the season, particularly when you get into the middle of the season, into the grind, you have a few losses in a row?
What's the interim coach going to do? If you've got a new coach that's going to come in at the end of next season?
Hasn't he got another year in his contract?
No, he's off.
This is his last year. Okay.
Yeah. This is why the Dragons are thinking, well, we're going to be transparent, as Loz says, and let him know where he stands and start to go through the process because
you know, if one more loss and you know what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's exactly right.
But one more loss, if they didn't tell him, you know what was going to happen. The pressure and the knives would be out for Anthony Griffin. So I think it was a no-win situation for the Dragons, whatever way they attacked it. But, you know, you see what happened over there with the New Zealand All Blacks.
They've had a bet each way. They have absolutely
stuffed. That one surprises me because you've got a coach in charge and they're a good chance of winning the World Cup. But they've decided that they're going to get rid of him at the end of the World Cup. Now, we've seen it in professional sport before where teams make the decision to move on and they end up going on and winning whatever championships they're involved in. So I've seen it both ways. And actually, there was a story in the paper yesterday about David Nusifora coming back into Australian rugby. I think they wanted him gone from the Brumbies the year that they won the competition. There was a player revolt, if I can remember properly.
Yeah,
The Brumbies acted and said, no, we need to get rid of this bloke. He's going at the end of the year. And the players went on and won the comp. So you can do it. And you could put egg on the administrator's face at the end of it. You know, they are interesting decisions that have been made. I don't mind the fact that you're upfront and honest with someone. I'd rather that than the full support of the board and then you get shot.
Yeah, I think you'd just rather see it before a ball's kicked. Like, if they're going to sack him, they should have had a new coach in this year. Like, how can you come out and say this 3 games in? That's the only thing. Like, they already made the decision. Before a ball was kicked this season, they would have already have made their decision that they're going in a different direction next year. They've just said he's got 1 year left on his contract. Let's finish it.
Yeah. Well, you could read into it like that, but you got to take them on face value.
Well, they haven't been that bad.
No, well, that's why they're
so they can't say we're playing so bad that we're gonna go a different direction.
No, but that's why they're doing what they're doing, I would assume.
But why have they not done that during the off season, preseason? What have they seen in the last 3 weeks for them to change direction?
Well, they want to see what's out there. I'm assuming that's what they want to do.
Has any coach come off contract in the last 3 weeks since footy started this season? Like, you want the Dragons want to see what other coaches are out there? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Has any coach come off contract in the last 3 weeks for them to see any difference between who was available for them to coach in the preseason versus who's available now?
Possibly not, but what they might be doing is seeing what coaches are off contract at the end of the year.
But they couldn't have done that in the preseason? What I'm saying is,
Dean Young, for instance, all right?
Yeah.
So, Cowboys start the year off well. If he's off contract, Cowboys might be looking to extend Dean Young for another 2 or 3 years. Ben Hornby, is he off contract at the South Sydney? These are the guys they're talking about. Mm. Jason Rolls, has he got a clause in his contract? They're probably just seeing where these guys are at, or they've thought about it and gone, you know what, Anthony Griffin is not the person that we are going to have lead the club next year. We need to act now. Mm. But, you know, if you're an assistant coach out there, like a Dean Young, who they're talking about as possibly being a contender, if he's in the situation where he's being offered a 2-year extension at the Cowboys, for instance, he's an assistant, he'd be sitting there thinking, oh, geez, do I sign a 2-year deal here as an assistant, or am I waiting to see whether there's a position as a first grade coach? Is there an opportunity to coach first grade at the end of the year, particularly with the Dragons, because there's been some speculation about the coach? And if there is, do I look bad if I re-sign here at the Cowboys and then I break that contract to move to the Dragons as a head coach?
But every assistant generally wants to be a head coach at some
that's
point.
Exactly,
you put
right.
that clause in the contract.
Yeah. Well, you can, but and some don't thing, like it. Because I remember with Adam O'Brien, the Roosters, and I don't know how the Roosters began with Jason Rolls being spoken about. As a target?
Yeah.
The only thing I'll say about this,
they've got him under contract.
This is another example. So the Dragons are prioritising the person they're trying to get in, not the person they're sacking, right? They're actually prioritising all the other coaches that are on the market or assistant
coaches.
They want
to have a look, yeah.
They want to have a look and they're prioritising them. They've got a current coach who's on contract.
Yep.
They've come out now. So the Dragons really can't complain if a coach ever walks out on them or if a player quits his contract. Because right now they've not cared about their head coach.
And
I don't think they've cared about their team for this season. I reckon they've ripped this season up saying, you know what, we actually don't care. Because if they care about, this cannot help the playing group. This cannot help. The current coach now, what does he do?
And that's what I'm getting at.
He's Harvey Norman, mate. And I tell you now, he's not selecting a player for the future.
No, exactly.
He's going, dude, get in the team. I just want to win every single game I can win to say, jam that up your backside, Dragons.
That's why I think he's just now, it's untenable.
Yeah.
As of right now, for Anthony Griffin to still be coach of the Dragons. And you're saying...
Well, mate, he'll lose 2 games, he'll go anyway. That's what'll happen.
Morning, boys. Hook getting told he has to reapply for the Dragons coaching job is so disrespectful. Yeah, he should tell the Dragons to go and get stuff, says Jake in Canberra.
Reapply. What a slap in the face. Is anybody that you can think of going to reapply in that situation?
No, probably not. Possibly not. I'm just sitting here trying to work out...
Yeah, the other way we don't
the other
like
way,
either. Yeah, I know.
With being respectful of someone in that position, because... Again, when you're in that position, it's always hard to take bad news.
Yeah, correct.
But you don't want them saying,
we got your back. And you're looking
all the way
around
through,
anyway.
And then you get wrestled at the end of the day.
Yeah. I just think it's an off-season thing. If we were 10 games in and results are gone so bad, I think You get it. But now, like, they're not playing the worst footy. They've only played three games. I just think they seem to have made this decision before a ball was kicked because the Dragons are not playing bad enough to change your decision. So why did they not announce it in the preseason?
No. Well, here, do you think Anthony Griffin is the person to take him forward, though?
Oh, mate, I don't know. I don't know anything about rugby league coaching.
No, absolutely not. There you go.
So, but has it changed? This is my point. Has it changed in three games? Did you think that in the preseason?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so why didn't they announce it?
Well,
why
they might have a different opinion then? To me. They might be thinking that
they've seen three games of footy now and they've changed their mind.
I don't know. But I looked at the Dragons and I thought at the start of the year, they wouldn't be playing finals football.
Yes.
And this is your third year in charge. If they don't play finals football, there's no way in the world I'm re-signing you.
Yeah, okay. Perfect.
That was my opinion of it.
I agree.
So there's nothing to suggest when I look at the Dragons that they're going to play finals footy this year. So if they don't play finals football, I don't see how the coach stays.
And if I'm to be honest, we had a conversation 3 years ago, 2 years ago, a lot of people thought that when the Dragons signed him, that he wasn't the right coach to take this Dragons team forward.
Yeah, but then you give him the chance, you let him build, you let him recruit, and some of the recruits have been questionable for the Dragons. You just want to make sure that you're setting the club up for the right direction, and that is to move up the ladder, not down the ladder.
I just feel like they ripped the season up. By announcing it now, I just think they ripped this. And again, maybe they're going to have a poor season anyway, but they're certainly, in my opinion, they're going
to. What about when a coach says he's moving on?
Yeah, but this is my point. We can't ask for loyalty one way and not give it the other.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like,
well, look, like Ivan Cleary.
Like Bennett knew that he was going to the Dolphins.
Ivan Cleary got absolutely
smoked. They made a grand final.
Yep.
So that didn't ruin their season. So
I reckon there's a bit of a difference between Wayne Bennett and anybody else.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. But I'm just using that as an example.
Well, look at Ivan Cleary. Look at the Tigers.
That he's moving on.
Ivan Cleary got absolutely smoked for not fulfilling his contract at the Tigers and walking out on the Tigers. Yet to me, the Dragons have just walked out on their coach. So that sometimes the player or the coach walks out on the club, doesn't fulfill the contract, and we hit them hard. But hang on the other, the shoe's on the other foot now. This club, in my opinion, has just walked out on their coach.
Yeah, no,
three games into a season.
I think when a lot of people would have their own different opinion on it, there'd be some people there that'd be happy with the decision. There'd be other people that'd be disappointed. There'd be some people that read into it like you are.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what the right and wrong way to go about it is, if you're in charge, what decision are you making? You know, are you being upfront and honest? Are you going to be someone that's going to act behind someone's back? Yeah. Are you going to give him the support but not?
And I'm not sitting here questioning, is it the right decision or wrong decision? Because I couldn't coach anyone. I got no idea. If the Dragons think, like you do, he's not the right guy to take him forward, I'm saying fair call. But they haven't made that decision this season, like with three games being played, in my opinion. I think they made this decision at the end of last year. And that, I think, would have been a more appropriate time at the end of the season to give him this information, to say this out loud. And then you got all preseason to find a new coach.
Well, we've got a number of text messages here saying that he was told in the preseason.
Well, if that's the case, then that's news as well.
Des Hasler's name's being mentioned here on the text line as well. We'll get to some more headlines after the news, by the way, coming up shortly. But I just want to take you to these comments from Ben Hunt only about, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, to the Sydney Morning Herald. And, on Anthony Griffin, he said, I'd encourage the board to really just back him. There's nothing worse than being in the situation we are now, where everyone's coming for your head, and you got the board second-guessing the coaching staff. You need to be all in. You've got to back your guy. And at the end of the day, if you get to the end of the season, it hasn't worked out, then make your decision. Don't get 5, 6, 7, or 8 games in and start second-guessing what we're doing, because then everything will really turn to crap. I'd encourage them to just back us. They are Ben Hunt's direct quotes. Now Ben Hunt wakes up this morning, walks in and goes, what the hell's going on here?
I'll say this to Ben Hunt, all right, as the playing group. Have they backed their coach with their performances? Tell me.
Great call, Oz.
Well, this year, well, this year they have started pretty well. This year they've done okay.
Yeah, last year.
Last season, agree with you 100%. And what happened with the presentation, agree with you 100%. But I think we've spoken to a number of Dragons players that have actually said, this year is different. This preseason was different. Our attitude towards the coach was different.
What? I'll grab you some quotes where they said the year before.
Yeah.
That it's different.
Yeah. Like, again, like, I'm not sitting here saying, is it, I don't know, is it wrong?
Look, of course you're going to back your coach if you've got a strong relationship with him. You want to see him have success. But for me, if you're going to talk like that, you've got to give, and Ben Hunt, to his credit, he's performed like that.
Yeah.
He's backed his coach because he's gone out there and played well week in, week out. But there's other people there that have... And we've had them on the program that have come on and said, oh, we never really had a good relationship with the coach. It's improved. Well, it might have improved, but it's like you're not supporting him with your performances. So if you're not performing on the field and you're not playing for your coach, then it's time for change.
Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. We've got a lot of texts here on the coaching situation of the Dragons. We will get to those. We've got Dick Fain coming up shortly. Over in the States. Just the news of the judiciary last night, though. For the Dolphins, they've lost Felice Kaufusi for 4 weeks after he was unsuccessful there at the judiciary in trying to have his dangerous contact charge for that hit on Jackson Hastings downgraded. Look, amongst all the deliberations, I mean, essentially the risk for injury was greater than the Joseph Swali he hit the previous week. So that was a big contributor to the fact he was found guilty. Just also at the judiciary, by the way, Jerome Hughes, he was unsuccessful. So he's got 2 weeks for his dangerous contact on the Titans' Tanner Boyd. But the Roosters' Fletcher Baker got off a high tackle charge against Campbell Graham. But 4 weeks for Kaufusi, I just think that is way over the top. But so basically now, if you hit someone hard, there's a slight chance of it being, I don't know, well, certainly, even if it's slightly late, you hit someone hard, you are going to be suspended.
We'll be confused by this all the way through the year.
Yeah.
Because you'll have some people go to judiciary and get off. You'll have some people cop a week suspension. You'll have others cop 4 weeks. I didn't think that tackle. And I know he went there to plead for a downgrade. And because he didn't get a downgrade, he gets that extra week. I know all that. But 4 weeks, seriously, for that?
Oh. Well, even 3 weeks for it. Forget the extra week for appealing.
It's a penalty.
Mate, he should not get 3 weeks for that. That's horrendous.
It's a penalty at best.
Yeah.
You know, you're coming in with that sort of speed. Then you sort of half sort of go to pull out. You know, there was no damage to Hastings. You didn't hit him around the head. Yes, you can cause some damage if you hit the person in the ribs and you hit it hard and you really target him. But I don't think that was a deliberate target. And I've seen Kaufusi deliberately target people before. No. That, to me, wasn't.
And that's why some people are happy that he's gone for 4 weeks.
Oh, yes, because of prize.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Not because of this incident.
No.
I actually think it's a horrible look for the NRL, him getting 4 weeks.
Yeah, well, you don't want the ball player to be able to dig into the line and not wear a bruise.
Oh. He's been unbelievable for the Dolphins and the start of the... He's been one of the players we've spoken most about. So 4 weeks out is...
You know, if there's really cheap shots and then there's ones that are just on the edge. And the ones that are the cheap shots are the ones that you want to eliminate and eradicate from the game. But there's ones where you're in the process of coming in and you talk about, you know, line speed in defence and putting the ball player under pressure, because what you don't want them to do is to be able to dig into the line. You want them to pass way before the line. But if they come into the line, you've got to get them. If they throw a dummy and go and you're moved away from them, they can slice through you.
Hello, Dick. How are you?
Gentlemen, doing well.
It's pretty much the only time of the year we talk college basketball. March Madness. And from what I can see, there's been some massive upsets, Dick. So tell us, who are we betting on as we get towards, what are we, at the Sweet 16 stage?
We are at the Sweet 16, 16 teams left. The games resume our time Thursday afternoon. And, you know, I think the two top-seeded teams going in, Alabama and Houston, I do feel like they are They're at a level unlike any other team in college basketball. So I'm going to stick with that championship game. You're not going to get any good odds, though, betting those teams because they were the two favorites coming in. We have seen a lot of parity, and that's not just this season. I mean, that's really been the last 10 or 15 years, and particularly the last three or four since we've had the transfer portal, which means players can play on one team 1 year and transfer without penalty to another team the very next year. The rules that used to be in place forever and ever and ever were that if you were to transfer, you sacrificed a year of eligibility. So there were far fewer transfers. And really, the transfers came in only, you know, hardship cases where, you know, the person was just, you know, just not in the right place. Well, now, college athletics, guys, is like free agency in the NFL, where you're a free agent, everybody's on a one-year contract. So there's transfers everywhere. So what happens is you get some of these players that are on these big-time colleges, and they're maybe not getting as much playing time as they want to get. So what do? They transfer down to a smaller school where they get all the time they want. They're the stars, and they elevate the smaller schools up towards the level of the bigger schools, and we're getting a lot of parity right now in college basketball.
Okay, let's go to the NBA then. But roughly 10 games left for clubs before the playoffs. Still trying to figure out what's going on in the Western Conference, Dick. And the Lakers at the moment just outside the play-in. So we'll be watching them closely. But even Golden State, where are they at? Phoenix with no Durant. How's it all going to play out in the West?
Golden State won a road game, guys. How about that? It's only their eighth road win of the season. I mean, I can't believe this. I have never seen this, and this has got to be unprecedented in NBA history. I haven't checked it out, but it's got to be unprecedented that a team goes 29-7 at home and 8-29 on the road.
He's incredible. And,
I mean, that is just – they're two completely different teams on the road than they are at home. Golden State's safe. They're going to – I would be stunned if Golden State didn't make the playoffs. The Lakers are hanging right there. And, you know, with the injury to Edwards for the Timberwolves – you know, that could potentially give them some problems. They might not be able to sneak in. So I think what the NBA wants, they want Golden State, they want Los Angeles, and if you could potentially get a matchup between those two teams, maybe in a play-in situation, a 7-10 play-in situation, can you imagine the ratings of a 7-seed Golden State against the 10-seed Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James back in the play-in game? I mean, that's what the NBA is hoping for right now. But to make sense of it, guys, you really can't. I mean, every one of these teams has had significant issues, either off the floor, like Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies, like LeBron James with his injuries, like Anthony Davis with his injuries, with the Golden State Warriors have got issues off the floor as well, or just with inconsistent play. I mean, look at the Denver Nuggets. I mean, the Nuggets have been basically the number one seed all the way through. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games, and you have to ask yourself, is that really an issue with Denver, or are they kind of bored right now? Are they kind of playing out the string and knowing they have a 3.5-game lead, and they're kind of resting up for the playoffs? That could be the situation with Denver, because I would be shocked at this point. It doesn't look like anybody's playing well enough to catch Denver in the Western Conference for the one seed.
Dick, do we know how far away LeBron is?
It's been really mum, guys, but, you know, when we talked about it a few weeks ago, I was anticipating a couple of weeks,
yeah.
And it's been much longer than that. Now, I guess if you're the Lakers and you're still hanging within a game, right, and they are within a half a game of the eighth spot, they're within one game of the seventh spot. So I guess the Lakers are, you know, they're risking it here, but they're saying, all right, let's see how long we can stay right there within a game until we have to bring LeBron back. Because the longer he rests, the better he's going to be in the playoffs. The longer he rests, the more healthy he's going to be, obviously at the risk of them not making the play-in game altogether. So as soon as they start to slip, if they do start to slip, I think you will see LeBron James back.
What's the latest with the NFL, Dick, and in particular Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, man. Aaron Rodgers is one of the most unique. Some would say the euphemism is unique. The naysayers would say irritating quarterbacks that we've seen in recent times. And he went on his pet podcast last week, and that's really all we ever hear from Aaron Rodgers. He goes on the Pat McAfee show. It was a buddy of his, a former NFL player, and you know, he pontificates on a weekly basis. Well, he was off of that for a while when this whole thing was going down, and he came on, and it was, I got to be honest with you, it was a very entertaining, like 45-minute interview, which he just laid it all out there. And what was interesting about it was he said that you can choose to believe him or not, but he said that he was 90% convinced when he went into his cave of darkness for 4 days, he was 90% convinced he was going to retire from the NFL. And then when he came out and he heard, he claims that all of a sudden now that they don't want me anymore. And so I'm going to, you know, stick it to them and try to force a trade. And that's what he's attempting to do. And now it's just a matter of the Jets and the Packers getting trade compensation for Aaron Rodgers.
Dick, just on that, because a lot of people see him as being sort of weird and a bit aloof and all about himself, and we know how great a quarterback he is, does that put teams off in terms of getting someone into your organization and the chemistry mightn't be right?
I don't think so, because teams are so desperate for quarterbacks, and they are always and teams are also very arrogant, and I'm sure that happens in your leagues as well. Like, every general manager and every head coach says, well, I can fix this guy. Yeah. Right? I mean, if he just comes in here to our situation, we'll take care of him. So it's a little combination of both. The, you know, that arrogance of, you know, general managers and presidents and head coaches, and how desperate teams are for quarterbacks. And the Jets feel like they've got a playoff caliber team if they just had a quarterback. I believe they have a playoff caliber team with Aaron Rodgers. I don't think they have a Super Bowl caliber team with Aaron Rodgers. So that makes it a little bit interesting. Do you really want to bring Aaron Rodgers in for what? A couple of years, give up a first round draft pick, maybe a later round draft pick in 2024, bring him in, have him play for 2 years when you're not going to make the Super Bowl. Now, if they were in the NFC, I might have a different opinion. But look at the quarterbacks in the NFC compared to the quarterbacks in the AFC. To get to the Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers would have to beat Patrick Mahomes. He would have to beat Josh Allen. He would have to beat Justin Herbert. He would have to beat Joe Burrow. The list goes on and on and on. The AFC is a nightmare, and which is interesting why Aaron Rodgers would want to jump ship from the NFC, which is an eminently winnable conference, to the AFC, which is not a winnable conference at all, unless you have a guy named Mahomes or a guy named Burrow leading your team.
This is in from one of our listeners, Dick. The fact that, morning boys, the Cowboys releasing Zeke Elliott is pretty big. What's Dick's thoughts?
Yeah, unfortunately, Zeke was done. I mean, Zeke's time in the sun had come and gone. He was, the running back position, and I honestly feel like we need to have a change in the collective bargaining agreement, because I feel like running backs are unfairly treated in the financial scale. Because if you're a first-round running back or a first-round draft pick like Zeke was, the team holds your rights for 5 years. And really, the first 4 years, you don't make a ton of money. You do make good money the fifth year, and then they could franchise you. And the running back franchise tag is as low as it is for any position. Well, the problem for running backs is it's like a rugby game for those guys, right? It's like a rugby match. They are getting hammered every time they touch the ball. Unlike wide receivers, unlike tight ends, unlike quarterbacks, who are not getting killed every time they touch the ball. Well, a 27-year-old running back is ancient, whereas a 27-year-old wide receiver, a 27-year-old quarterback, they've got, you know, wide receivers good until he's 31, 32 years old. A quarterback we're seeing is good until he's 35 to 40 years old. You get to be 27 and you have a lot of carries, you're pretty much done. And it shows in Zeke Elliott's performance recently.
Just finally, Dick, the WGC match play. Have you got a tip for us?
Boy, this is really interesting, guys. I mean, you got to take a look at who's been good in match play. You also have to take a look at who's been good at this course. Scottie Scheffler is hot. He should repeat. I mean, he should be considered the favorite, but I'm not going to put any money on the favorite because you're not going to make any money that way, right? So let me give you some... I don't have any dark horses, but I do like a couple guys who have been playing very, very well recently. How about our guy Jason Day, who has consistently been good? He's been good on this track. He's been good in match play. Tyrrell Hatton as well has just been waiting in the wings after having an unbelievable Sunday a couple of weeks ago. So those are a couple guys a little bit down the board that also have some fairly decent matchups. I'll throw one more at you, Tony Finau. He's a guy that I think is going to be ready to pop this spring as well. So there's really no safe bet when you're dealing with a bracket like this. So I'd kind of stay away from the top three or four guys because I just don't think the value is there in a match play situation.
Okay, for our listeners, with Tab, Hatton, Finau, Jason Day, all $26. Mate, you have a great week. Thank you.
All right, boys, talk to you next week.
Okay, lots of texts here. Hey, Laurie, there's no confusion with the judiciary. It's like the salary cap for the Roosters. It doesn't apply. That's the Bomaderry Eagles sending that one through. Boys, you're off your heads. He hit him in the back. Did you see the whiplash on Hastings' head? Kafusi's a grub. Look at the elbow he threw in the same game. Oh, Wardy from Newcastle. Kafusi obviously didn't have J-Max lawyer. Here's another text here. Some words of advice for the Dragons. Stay away from Dinosaur Dez. Cheers the tune. Gents, as a long-time Dragons fan, now is not the time to sack Griffin. The board, however, just keep making errors like this over the years, and it's those folk who should be showing the door, and the sooner the better, says Peter. There's no loyalty in rugby league at all. Clubs and fans bash a player for walking out, changing their mind on contracts. Clubs only look at players' coaches like a commodity, and if their value to the club drops, there is no loyalty. They're moved on. The game thrives from tribalism from fans and is marketed that way, but at the end of the day, this is big business. And in every business, if you're no longer useful, you are made redundant, says Mick from the Gong. RE sacking the coach. The West Tigers last 15 games under Madge. 3 wins, 12 losses. After Madge, 0 wins, 13 losses. And they don't look like winning anytime soon. It's about time a few players get sacked for their poor performance. Cheers, Average Joe. If the Sharks put a score on them at Jubilee on Sunday, Griffin will be glad if he goes now, or it will be turmoil next Monday morning. If I was him, I'd go now. Life's too short. Every week he looks like he's in pain to me in the coach's box. Go fishing, Griffin, is that text.
Yeah, it's a tough job, coaching. Yeah, it's a tough job. 24/7 in the NRL, the scrutiny that you're under. You know, 3 weeks in and here we are talking about a coach possibly not surviving the season. I feel for all of them, actually, because, you know, it's a privileged position to be in, but there's a lot of stuff that comes with it. And if you're not having success, the finger is pointed at you. And I've always said on the program that the players have got to be more accountable in every club, more so. And I know the coaches are the leaders of the organisations and they're going to take their fair share of responsibility, but, geez, the players get away with some.
Oh, yeah.
When their team's not performing. Mm-hmm. And they are the ones that should carry most of the responsibility.
And just, I guess, to compare what's going on with the Dragons with what happened yesterday over in New Zealand rugby. So the news there, stunning news in a World Cup year. So New Zealand rugby appointed, Crusaders champion, championship winning coach. He's won 6 titles coaching the Crusaders. Former All Black himself, Scott Robertson, on a 4-year deal from next year. After the current All Blacks coach, Ian Foster, it's been determined that he's going to end at the Rugby World Cup this year. Foster has previously said, though, that this would undermine his team's crack at a World Cup, but New Zealand rugby's gone ahead and done it anyway. But the question now is, what if the All Blacks win the World Cup? And if they don't win, everyone will be saying, why didn't you appoint Scott Robertson straight away?
Mm.
As the Wallabies have done, I guess, with the Eddie Jones, Dave Rennie situation.
And we love it because we sit back here and we second guess and throw all these scenarios out there and see which one ends up happening. But you look at professional sport around the world now, you look in the NPL, clubs get sacked for Tottenham. I think they're looking at sacking.
He's under the pump.
Under the pump, but they're running fourth in the EPL. But that's not good enough for them. Mm. You look at Arnie. Before the World Cup, he was gone. They just didn't have the money to pay him out. Goes away to the World Cup, wins games. What happens? Extended through to the next World Cup. He was gone.
And he's a legend.
He was
coach
gone.
Coach of the year.
And I said on the program, I said if I was the only one, I'd walk. Now that we've qualified, I'd walk. Mm. but he wanted to prove to people, and he did. So you can turn it around, and there's always examples of coaches that have been dead man walking that have survived and gone on and had wonderful careers. But I don't know. I just look at it. It's a tough job. The players, though, for me, in all sport, need to take far more greater responsibility for their performances rather than always being on the coach.
Third one-day international tonight in Chennai. India $1.68, Australia $2.20 with tab for that one. As Clarkie mentioned earlier, David Warner still yet to be past fit as he recovers from a fractured elbow. Didn't play in the first two one-day internationals. I want to ask you, Clarkie, on Mitch Marsh. So Rohit Sharma says that Mitch Marsh is in the top three or four in the world when it comes to power. And he's been super since moving up to number three in the 2020 side. Very successful in this series as opener in the one-day international side. Oh, yeah, it's been really attractive watching Head and Marsh sort of open the batting together. Obviously, Warner's going to come back in. We've got the World Cup coming up. By the way, the dates of that World Cup look like being October 5 to November 19 to give us something straight after footy season. But where do you think Mitch Marsh is best suited in our one-day side?
I think one-day in T20 cricket, he can bat anywhere. He can open the batting, he can bat three, because, again, he is very powerful. Mitch is very hard hands. So Mitch's greatest challenge is going to be starting his innings in Test cricket. One-day cricket and 2020 cricket, the wickets, it's a belter. Every batsman wants to open the batting. You know, if I had my career again, someone said, pick a position, where do you want to bat, in one-day cricket or 2020? No-brainer. You want to open. You know you've got 50 overs, you've got two brand-new white balls, and you're batting on wickets that there might be a bit of swing for two overs. Particularly the World Cup over in India, I think he could open the batting. He's definitely an option to certainly bat in that top three like he does in 2020 cricket, because I say the conditions you're batting in. Mitch's challenge is, like I said, starting his innings against, say, the series recently in India, Test series in India. You have it playing with soft hands, being allowing the ball to come right in and rotate the strike. He's forceful. Even his defense, like, Mitch doesn't block the ball and the ball stop at your feet. If he blocks it, it'll trickle all the way back to the bowler. He's very hard, so that brings in bat pad, caught behind, caught slip, that type of thing at the start of your innings against a moving ball, a spinning ball, or a swinging or seaming ball. So in short form, bat him anywhere. And in India, I think they're going to be massive totals at the World Cup. You're going to see 300 runs plus in a lot of the World Cup games. So I think he's a great option. That power at the top of the order where there's field restrictions, he hits the ball as comfortably in the air as he does along the ground. So I think you could, you know, if he's not opening, if Warner comes back for the World Cup and they go, let's say they go Travis Head and Dave Warner, then I think he's certainly an option to be a pinch hitter. Lose a wicket early, get in there. You use either him or Smith as your number three. And then you need players in the middle order that can rotate the strike, play spin bowling well, speed between wickets, and then you need your power hitters from six down, really. So I reckon your number four, your number five for the World Cup, you want good players of spin bowling, and you're probably thinking strike rotation to keep wickets in hand, and then you're 6 to 11, you want, you know. So you could probably even bat Maxwell at 6, Stoinis at 7, or the other way around in India, because those blokes can make 100 off 60 balls. And you can afford to take a risk against that new ball with someone like Mitchell Marsh to maximise the power play overs.
We've got a pretty good squad, our one-day squad. Oh, it's going to be hard to pick a squad of 15 for the World Cup.
Well, I said that about our 2020 team as well. We didn't make the semi-final in Australian conditions, in our own backyard.
Yeah, this competition's more prestigious. The 2021, they have one every year.
Every 2 years,
World Cup every year. Well, it feels like...
But yeah, our one-day team's good. But again, it's going to be, as long as we can combat Indian conditions, which you'd like to think are going to be a lot better for us than the Test series. We just won't spin anywhere near as much, so we should do well.
Just on that then, because we've got a lot of all-rounders.
Yep.
Are you picking all the all-rounders, or are you still going with sort of your bowling unit plus, say, if you throw the Cooper, eight sort of...
I'm legitimate batters. Well, but I would like to think in all formats...
You're not going six wicketkeeper, four bowlers, are you? How many all-rounders do you throw?
No, I am. I'm going... All right. I'm going... My keeper can bat anyway. I need a legit, at least one spinner, which seems to be Zampa at the moment, and then my three quicks. And then I'm hoping in my top six, you've got blokes that can bat and bowl. So Maxwell's a good enough batsman and bowls overs. Stoinis in one day cricket, good enough batsman, bowls overs. Mitchell Marsh, good enough batsman, bowls
but you're
overs.
Putting all them in?
Cameron Green. If they're good enough to bat in the top six, I'm picking them. Really, you're going to go two specialist batsmen in. Let's say they go Warner and Head, and you go Steve Smith. There's three. There's my top three that are specialist batsmen. Travis Head can bowl, though. And then I'm probably looking at, yeah, well, I'm probably batting Mitchell Marsh. You could bat Mitchell Marsh at three, Steve Smith at four. Mate, Cameron Green, five. Maxwell, six. So, you can't fit Stoinis at seven. One of them's going to miss out. Mm. But really, if you can have, in one day cricket, in those, and Australia's going to work out, do they want two spinners? Is Ashton Agar playing? You got to work out. I reckon you need minimum six guys that can bowl. You really want seven in one day cricket these days. Seven guys that can bowl your overs to get you through your 50 overs.
So you're going to have to pick a few all-rounders.
So you're going to have to pick, yeah. And we've got that because, like I say, these blokes are good enough bat. Maxwell, Cameron Green, Mitchell Marsh, particularly, those three are good enough to bat in our top six in one day cricket.
Yeah.
And they're going to, but there's plenty of overs. Then you could go two quicks, if it, the spinning conditions, two spinners. Because Agar can bat as well.
Yeah. We seem like we've got a.
We've got a good lot of, squad.
We've got
options.
Good options.
We've got options, yep.
We've got a lot of good options. But just getting that balance for me is the right way.
And the balance in Australia is very different to the balance in India. And that's where the selectors have got to be smart. Pick the best 11 for the conditions you're playing in.
Mm.
That's what you have to do. It's not the same World Cup squad if you're playing in Australia or South Africa as what they've got to pick for India.
Yep. Time for a bit of swap or keep. Anyone want
I'm
to go
keeping.
First?
I'm keeping the Broncos in my eight. I made the swap last week with the Melbourne Storm out.
How far in the eight, though? Their favourites to win the premiership
I can understand
third
why.
Favourites.
I can understand why. I don't have them there at the moment, but I can see them sort of finishing deep into the season. Like, you look at their team, it's strong. Like, their backline is as good and has as much strike as anyone. And they've got some of the best young forwards in the game. Like, you got Flegler, you got Payne Haas up front, then you got Carrigan as your 13, you've got Capel in the back row with Jordan Rickey, who's one of the most improved players. You know, hooker with Billy Walters and Corey Pax. You know, that could be an area that gets exposed at some point. But I like the Broncos. I think there's a lot to like about their team.
17 into $8 since the start of the season to win the comp. You look at the Cowboys, they've pretty much done the opposite. They've been 10 out to $19. Interesting, there's still no money for the Broncos, though. So that tells you that the traders are taking no risk with them.
I can understand why they wouldn't be taking any risks.
The bookies really like them.
Yeah. I've still got other teams in front of them. But I think that what they've done, and, you know, they've had their moments, but one thing that's impressed me, they went to Penrith and they won. And the ability last week in a short period of time just to put on points in a tight game. I like that with the Broncos. And they just, Reece Walsh, he's going to be some player.
Star. You swapping or keeping anything?
I'm going to keep Melbourne Storm in my eight.
Oof.
Even though they haven't started very well at all. And I'd like them to have an off week this week again so the Tigers can beat them. But
4 weeks.
I'm keeping them in my eight. I just think we write Melbourne off every year. This has probably been their worst. Well, not their worst start, but this is probably, as you say, Loz, they've looked as bad as we've seen them for a long time. But I refuse to write Melbourne off. I feel like people do that every year, and I'm not willing to do that yet.
Well, I've got a Melbourne Storm theme as well. I'm swapping, and I'm Cameron Munster. I'm swapping for the Dolphins. I've made a mistake. Oh. I made a mistake.
Is that rash?
No.
Or swap and keep?
That's both.
He made a mistake.
No,
he didn't.
He could have gone to Southeast Queensland on 1.4 and been...
You reckon he's not making 1.4 in Melbourne?
Well, don't think that's an issue, but the weather, the lifestyle, depends what you're into. But
I actually think for someone like Cameron Munster, the less fame, the better. So I think Melbourne is a safer place for him, his career, his relationship, his future than the Dolphins. So I actually think very smart decision, Cameron Munster.
What have you got against Queensland?
I love Queensland, but I think he would be a lot more well-known up there, and I get your joke, a lot more well-known. He would be, like, look at Reynolds up there. He's the face of everything. He's got to deal with Foxtel. That would have been Munster.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think that is would have been a smart decision. Well, I think a smarter decision is stay in Melbourne, hide amongst the AFL, do your thing on the field, have a great life. And I don't think money's going to be a problem for him. I think he's making enough money in Melbourne.
I can't disagree with anything you just said then. I think the lifestyle for Cameron Munster to have and enjoy his football will be in Melbourne.
Made an error.
Limelight suits some people, don't suit others.
Yeah, still.
Adam Reynolds embracing it.
He would have been the draw card, wouldn't he, week for this battle for Brisbane.
Yeah, definitely.
And I still reckon they would have been 3-0. Anyway, I would have swapped. I reckon he's made an error. Still, I think he'll be fine. Cameron Munster. Name this week, by the way, but no Jerome Hughes after he was unsuccessful at the judiciary last night. Got 2 weeks. From the City Morning Herald, Adam Pengilly, good morning.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. How was the golf yesterday, Mido?
Oh, unreal. We shot one under our four-ball Ambrose team of Lillis, Maloney, Tuanui, and myself. And we all had horrendous moments and some okay moments.
Well, that's the best part about Ambrose, isn't it? You can just hit it anywhere, and as long as one of your teammates hits it nice and straight, then you're sweet. Don't have to worry about it.
Exactly right. Takes the pressure off, but the worst is the six-foot putt or the four-foot putt when no one else has made it, and you're just shaking over the top of it, waiting for everyone else to slam you when you don't make it, when you go last. We had a couple of those. Great day. What a course it is there at New South Wales. It was one of the better golf days I've been to, mate. But the Dragons in the news, your team and your colleague at the Herald, Michael Chemis, breaking the story yesterday concerning Anthony Griffin. And we've been debating this morning whether it's untenable that he even continues as coach moving forward from this day.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it, Jared? Because obviously the club has tried to be as transparent as possible and have told Anthony they want to sort of scour the market, look at other options potentially to take over in 2024. They've asked him to reapply for his job, and he's obviously free to do that. But having something happen so early in the season, it's quite strange. And I think even Loz, you'd probably admit the Dragons have showed some positive signs in the first couple of weeks, probably certainly performed a little bit better than most people expected to and got off to an okay start. They certainly in the fight against the Broncos for 70 minutes there last Saturday night in a game where most people come out of it saying, well, the Broncos might be the real deal to be a top eight team and a genuine top four team this year. So what effect this is going to have on the team, I'm not too sure. Like, my criticism is that they get their timing wrong about when to look for a new coach. I think they had a chance to try to get Cameron Serraldo at some stage last year there, and they hung on and hung on and hung on with Hook and decided to go into this year and say, okay, he'll be our coach to start the year. Then after two rounds, they're turning around saying, well, we're going to open up the process now and start interviewing external candidates. So listen, I don't know where it goes from here. Obviously, they're going to try and move fairly swiftly, but it's hard on Anthony Griffin now. He's not lost.
Yeah, it will be. But as we keep talking about, like, the playing group are saying that they want him and they're supporting him. Well, now's the time that they dig in, because if it goes pear-shaped pretty quickly, it's hard to see him sort of lasting the rest of the season, you know. But they've got to perform well against the Sharks this weekend, the Dragons, because you know how things operate in the NRL. You can either go, it can go sour very quickly, or you can have the bugger you attitude and get the job done and win and going a winning way, and then you force people's hands.
I just wonder what they're thinking in terms of another coach, Loz. Like, they've obviously got a few of those old boys who are in the mix and have done their time.
Sorry, Adam, to cut you off there, you tell me whether Jason Riles has got a get-out clause in his contract with the Roosters?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, Loz. I definitely know his contract at the Roosters till the end of 2024, and we do know what happened with Adam O'Brien when he tried to leave his contract a year early to take the Newcastle job. Put it this way, it didn't go down well with Nick Politis and Trent Robinson. He eventually was allowed to leave that contract, but when Nick signs a deal with someone, he expects you to be there till the end of that contract. So Jason Ryle still has another year to go next year on his on his contract. There's going to be inevitable talk about Dean Young. There's going to be inevitable talk about Ben Hornby, who have both done work now away from the Dragons at other clubs. Obviously, Dean Young up at the Cowboys and Ben Hornby at the Rabbitohs. Another guy I think his name will be in the mix will be Shane Flanagan, obviously. He knows the club. He's been there a couple of different times now as an assistant coach, and then obviously he was working there last year as the list manager. I don't think he's made no secret about the fact that he would like to take on another head coaching job. And I think Manly have been quite open in saying that, yes, we want him as part of our coaching staff, but if another job comes up, we're not going to stand in his way. And then obviously you've got the likes of Des Hasler and Michael Maguire sort of still sitting there in the background, premiership winning coaches. So I think the Dragons just want to give themselves as long as possible to try and sort out this next coach, which is fine. I've got no massive issue with that, but like we're into round two already and we've opened up this process. So anyway, I think the proof will be in the pudding and the results will certainly tell the story in the next couple of months.
Racing and the Golden Slipper winner Shinzo is off to the paddock.
Yeah, no great surprises at Jared, to be fair. I think Chris Waller, we know, is always quite conservative with his horses. And Chris admitted in his own words, he would have loved to have tested him in the size produce over 1,400 metres and he probably would have started a short price favourite in that race. But after coming through that Golden Slipper, he's decided to give him a break and get him ready for his three-year-old season. And the one thing you've got to consider as well is that he's done all this in his first racing preparation. Like, he didn't debut until this year after Christmas. So that's quite uncommon for a lot of these two-year-olds to do that and still win a Golden Slipper. So Chris is going to obviously err on the side of caution. We know he backed up after the Slipper when he won the Pago, so had a couple of tough runs in the space of a week. So he'll head to the paddock. He's done his job. He's worth an absolute packet now. Can't wait to see him back in the spring as a three. I'd imagine he'll be probably targeting races like the Golden Rose. And if he's not going to go over further ground, I'll probably bring him back for the Coolmore Stud Stakes. So, yep, can't wait to see him back in the spring.
What do you know about this multi-million-dollar mare alcohol-free?
Well, she cost a fortune, Loz. We know that. More than $10 million. They brought it down to Australia, the most expensive horse ever imported to Australia, I think it's fair to say. And obviously, she was at the trials there yesterday, had a nice little hit out, won a trial quite comfortably. That's not to say too much about the opposition. I think it's probably a fairly moderate sort of trial. And I've read with interest that Adrian Bodd, I think you guys have spoken to him on the program about this, he's going to target probably at this stage the Queen of the Turf. So, which I thought was a bit of a surprise. I thought they might have tried to keep it to the sprint trips and take on the TJ Smith Stakes fresh down here in the Autumn Carnival. But I think it's fair to say that in the spring, they'll probably try and keep it to the shorter trips. And when you've paid that much money for a horse like that to come down to Australia, yes, she's an extremely valuable breeding commodity, but they're going to want to get some of it back on the track, I would have thought, at some stage. So you'd imagine the Everest is going to be a nice, suitable race for her in the spring. Yulong's got a slot in that race. So, yep, she'll probably have one run in the Queen of the Turf. Not quite sure if they'll go too much further than that this autumn and then bring her back for the spring and maybe target an Everest.
Yeah, I'm just seeing she's won, well, four Group 1s. Two of those over the mile and two over the 1,200, including the July Cup, of course, at Newmarket last year, which she beat Artorias, which ran third in that race. So she's clearly adaptable and, you know, got some versatility about her. So, yeah, intriguing. And just looking at the markets too, so for the Queen of the Turf with Tab, she's $5. And as it stands, $15 for the Everest. And as you mentioned, Adrian Bott said we'll probably have a crack at the sprints in the spring after the Queen of the Turf in the short term here in the autumn. But just Zach Purton, he's set to come home for day one of the championships as well.
Yeah, great news, Jared. He's obviously came back with great success, winning a couple of those group ones a couple of weeks ago. He's been booked to ride both Giga Kick in the TJ Smith Stakes and Mr. Brightside defending his Doncaster crown. So he's picked up both those rides with Craig Williams still injured from that fall a couple of weeks ago down there in Melbourne. I think Zach's really enjoying himself coming back down to Sydney and having these hit and run missions. We know he's getting towards probably the end of his career. He's made no bones or made no secret about that. So another hit and run mission for him on day one of the championships just adds a bit more star power, I suppose, to that first day at Randwick.
And what do you like today on the Kenzo?
I'm going to have a throw at the stumps and try and get some value in the first here, Jared. Race one, number three, Ackley's, is my best value bet on the program. She's a horse that a couple of runs as a two-year-old so far. She actually debuted in that Gimcrack Stakes. I thought ran really well behind Platinum Jubilee. Went for a little spell, came back and I thought ran well again behind Lazargo at her second start. So she's had a bit of a break now and looking forward to seeing her first up. I think she's a big price. So we'll have something on her. That's Ackley's in the first on the Kensington track.
Give her strength. Race one, number three, Ackley's, barrier two, $17 to win, $4 to place with Tab. Have a great day, mate.
See you, boys.